Hey guys, and welcome to Personality Bingo with me, your host, Tom Moran. So guys, this week on the podcast, we have the lovely Nicole O'Connor. Nicole is an actress, a singer, a playwright, a facts contributor. Nicole kind of does it all, and she really, really is great. We talk a lot about her play coming up in the Dublin Gay Theatre Festival, which is also going to be paired with a lovely play that my friend Liam Moore wrote called Wasting Paper. Please do check that out at the Pierce Centre. Nicole gives all the dates and all the proper plugs, which is brilliant at the end of the episode, and I really, really recommend it. They're going to be paired, so it's going to be Squad Theatre Company meets Nicole O'Connor's brilliant new play, and absolutely get out there and support some live theatre in Dublin. And before we get into it, I just want to say a few thank yous as always. A massive thank you to Gavin Ryan, to Keela Whelan, to Stacey for getting in touch, to Missy Brennan, to Stephen, to all the regulars who always get in touch. Guys, it means so much to hear from you, and I really, really appreciate it. Also, we've got some kind of exciting news, because next week on the podcast, we're going to have a special American edition. I was over in Chicago a couple of weeks ago, and I got to do some really exciting episodes with some really good Chicago comics and improvisers in the shape of Carly Kane and Nick Jester. So please do have a listen next week, because it's pretty cool to get a different perspective, a bit more diversity on the podcast. And I think you'll really enjoy that. But without further ado, guys, please do enjoy Nicole O'Connor playing Personality Bingo with Tom Moran. Tom Moran's Personality Bingo. Tom Moran's Personality Bingo. We play Personality Bingo with Tom Moran?
I'm so ready.
All right, let's do it. Okay, and the energy just shot up.
I know.
What the listener will never know is that we speak before this, and we tell secrets, and they'll never know. And then I just speak louder when we start doing this. Isn't that weird? I'm such a phony.
I'm a liar. You're such a phony.
They'll never know the real me.
That energy, though, you made that happen to
Yeah. 1 to 100, I'm like a Ferrari, man. All right, let's do it. So I'm going to just explain the premise. I think you kind of know the crack. There's 60 balls in this bowl. There's 60 questions on this sheet. I'm going to put 60 minutes on the clock, and I'm going to give you a sheet with six numbers on it.
Okay.
If all of your six numbers come out, that means that you get to ask me any question that you like. And I promise, I'll answer completely, honestly, truthfully, complete transparency. All right, okay, do us a favor. Read out those numbers just so everyone's clear on what you have.
Okay. Excuse me, that was the tiniest burp ever. You probably didn't hear that. Okay, so we got 4, 16, 32, 23, 54, and 49.
You should definitely present the lotto.
Thank you so much.
That's incredible. Okay, right, will we just play?
Let's go. So excited, Tom. I'm such a fan of the podcast. I've been listening, I've been re-listening, and I don't know, I love it.
That's amazing. Tweet about it. Send out a little tweet. We were talking about this yesterday. I'm going to do a bit of shameless self-promotion here.
Go on.
That I need to start tweeting about it more and pushing out and trying to get not to say that you are not my dream guest, because you are.
Thank you.
But I'd love to have Glenn Hansard. Do you know what I mean? or try and get really cool people. And so thank you so much. Anyone out there who's listening, please send a tweet. It actually does make a big difference. Or a Facebook, or just recommend it to a friend, because it's real nice that you like it. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I really like it.
That's great.
And hey, listen, Glenn Hansard is one of those Irish celebrities that everyone seems to bump into. I know five people that have met him personally,
really?
You know?
Glenn Hansard's probably one of my biggest heroes in the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've seen him six or seven times.
I've never seen him live, but I remember just listening to, what's that song of his? Is it 7 Day Mile or something?
Oh, is it Way Back in the Way Back When?
Maybe. I remember listening to that when I was 13, being yeah, the song gets me.
Oh, really? Yeah, he's just great. And live, it's one of the best things ever. He's so good. He's such a great storyteller. The energy, his vocals are incredible. The band he has, I couldn't recommend it anymore. He plays a gig at Vicar Street at Christmas time, just before Christmas. Mm. And I was thinking about it the other day. I was thinking about what I would say if we got him on the podcast, and I would honestly tell him that he's been a part of some of the best days of my life. Seeing him live, it's been just incredible, just mind-blowingly good. Anyway,
there you go.
Right, let's do it. So it's 12:21. We're gonna play until 1:21, and we'll have all the fun. That kind of rhymed, because one rhymes with fun.
Yeah,
Anyway, I'll stop talking. All right, yeah, here we go. Okay, it's number 29.
Okay.
Ooh, that noise wasn't anticipated. Do you have 29?
I don't.
Okay, well, no worries. Ooh, we're going right in there. Okay, we're going right in there. So, what is your definition of success for yourself?
Oh, God. My definition for success for myself would be, I suppose, just not having to have another job, you know, other than my dream job. You know, it's an interesting thing for me. Well, only to me, but there's so many things that I want to do. Like, I'm an actor, singer, and all this kind of stuff. So I don't know exactly what, like, is my dream thing to do. But whatever that is, I hope that, you know, just as long as I'm making money through just that and I'm living in a nice place or whatever, I think I'll be happy. That's my definition of success.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think that's so great that you do loads of things, because I think now, especially, look, I feel like I'm in the exact same place as you.
Yeah.
And I think now, and I feel like that as a lot as well. I'm like, I write a lot, and then I act like any chance I get, and I try comedy, and I write music too. And it's like, I think that that's actually so important, especially now, because I think before it was much easier to be one thing. And I know it's such a cliche thing to say, but with the internet and stuff like that, it is so much like you kind of have to, like what you were saying about your one woman show, which we'll talk about later, but you have a show coming up, Both Sides Now, and off mic we were just talking about how it's great that like you wrote that, you're playing music in it, you're performing in it, you know, I know you had producers and stuff, but like inevitably end up part producing it yourself. Like, that's incredible. I think that's what you got to do, so I think that's great.
Yeah, sometimes I think maybe I should just dedicate myself to one thing and like really put all my efforts into one, like, you know, either the acting or the singing or the writing.
Yeah.
But ultimately it's not, you know, I love doing all these things, but I love doing them all. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd be a little bit unhappy if I just had to do one of them. Well, maybe not. I mean, no, and still.
It depends. I know. I completely know what you mean. And I think about this too. But I wonder if you were... So let me ask you this. If... Like, because whenever someone asks me this question, I honestly struggle with it. I think I could find an answer. But if you had to just pick one of those things to do, like singing, playing music, writing, acting, like if you had to, what would you pick?
I think singing, because singing was the first thing that I realized myself that I could do, and it's something that comes very naturally to me. It's something that I didn't have to train to do, to work professionally in, you know, before I even trained in performance, I toured singing, you know. So it's definitely singing. Oh, that's, I feel bad now that I'm saying definitely.
And that's exactly why you shouldn't ever, I don't think you should ever limit yourself like that. But I completely understand you're saying, like, if you're splitting your time, like, by doing all these things, like, if I streamlined it, maybe I'd get, like, you know, four times the results rather than splitting my time into four different ways. I don't think that's true. Especially if that's, like, if it feels true to you to do all of them, then I think that's really important. I think that's what you should listen to.
I think I should, too.
I don't know. Like, what the fuck do I know? But I'm just saying, like, from listening to you and, like, from, you know, knowing your various talents, it'd be such a waste, like, if you're like, everyone's gifted with like various things, but I think that it's so important to, if you think you only have one thing, to look around, because you almost definitely don't. And I mean, I don't even mean that in a creative field, but like, you know, I'm sure we all have friends who are in college for different bits, or who are, you know, entering the workforce in different ways, and if they think that, like, oh, I'm the accountant who's really good at numbers, but maybe you're not, like, maybe you're like a really good leader as well, and that's actually really important too. Or maybe you're actually the person who is a really good ear for someone to listen to, and that's a total skill as well. And it's
maybe,
like,
it complements it, because I don't know what type of, if I just did singing, I don't know what type of singer I'd be, because I don't listen to like the top 40, and I don't mean that in a hipster way, it just doesn't agree with my ears, like. And I'm only now learning how to play the guitar and become like a musician, but I don't like write songs or anything like that, so I don't even know what I'd be like if I was just a singer, you know what I mean? And which is why I paired it with acting, and like musical theater was my first thing that I wanted to do, because I was like, okay, so I can sing and act together. Oh my god.
It is an amazing thing. And it's funny, musical theater, because some people don't get it, which, and I get not getting musical theater. Like, I don't like most musical theater. I work in musical theater, like, for a good chunk of, like, a good chunk of my jobs have been musical theatre. But, like, I don't like a lot of it. Like, I totally get it. But when it all comes together and when it's good, I'm like, whoa, this is, like, there's something really special about, like, because music can just do something to you that nearly anything else in the world can't. Mm-hmm. And when you can get that together with really good storytelling and really good performers and, like, this level of truth, like, I think that's crazy impactful.
It's so
impactful.
Powerful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm conscious of, like, getting all these numbers, Tom.
I was just
going to
say,
on.
You see, this is my tactic. I get you talking. All right, okay, let's go again. All right, here we go. Number 59.
59.
Or 54.
Oh, I keep looking at that 49 and getting confused. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, number 59. When was the last time you wrote a letter?
Oh, last time I wrote a letter was... aside from my show, which featured like love letters, so I had to write letters as a prop, which was great because I could kind of read from the letters as well. Obviously, yeah. I was off book as well, but it was nice to have a moment in a one-woman show where you could hold something in your hand and know that the lines were there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, why act like you're reading when you can just read?
Exactly.
That'd be my attitude.
There you go.
Yes.
Last time I wrote a letter was last year around Christmas time. A friend of mine in a show... we were working backstage. We were in a show together called Henry VI Part Three, one of the most famous Shakespeare's, well loved Shakespeare's in the world. He slipped a letter in my bag, and beautiful letter where he was just like, "Oh, you're a great friend," and everything like that. P.S. Here's a €2 back from when you gave me money for me to get you lunch the other day. And I thought that was so sweet that he wrote this like elaborate letter, and then he was like, "Take back your money, go Aww. on." So I wrote a letter back to him and slipped it in his bag, and I just thought it was the sweetest thing, where I was like, "How, take your money back again, sir." Something really lovely happened there when we began like writing letters to each other. Like, our friendship took another turn where it was just really kind of like sweet, and we had these little things that we could hold where I'm going to keep those letters forever.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we're just saying, you know, you're a good friend. I like you.
Yeah, completely. They're, and I, you gave no inclination that that's the direction that relationship was in, but like, there's something so romantic about a letter from anyone. I was looking at, I went home, like, to home, which is County Meath for me, and I was going through some stuff in my room. I was looking for something, and I found, a letter from an ex-girlfriend who I'm still really good friends with, which is great. And I just looked at it, and the thought that went into it, and like, there was stuff like stuck into it, and like pictures of my friends and private jokes, and like, it would actually nearly make you emotional, because it's like, that is like so much more amazing than you could ever get in a Facebook message or a text or an
Completely.
Email.
Completely. There's something about it. And like, I'd be the exact same, which is why I wrote it into my show, the idea of having love letters. It's such a like a teenage love kind of thing. And it's so earnest and so sweet. Yeah. And like, I have my own love letters from my own, like, you know, exes in my life. And I cherish them no matter what the like relationship went in the end. Like, I just love them.
Yeah. And it's something I don't do enough at all. I don't do it enough.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be like a March resolution for me.
Write more letters.
Yeah.
Because it's, you don't even need to be at that state in a friendship, you know, where you find, okay, this is the right moment where I'm going to write someone a letter. It can kind of aid the friendship in a way to write a letter. Now, obviously, don't do that to someone you barely know. They might get a bit freaked out. Uh-huh. But something happened there with my friend in Henry VI where... like, our friendship went so much stronger just from that little, like, romantic gesture.
Yeah.
And I love that so much.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of nice, like, as in, a letter is such a Shakespearean device as well.
There you go.
It was kind of suitable. Okay, Ooh. Let's see what we got for you. Number 47. Do you have it?
No.
Okay. Right. Number 47. So, what is your biggest career disappointment?
My biggest career disappointment would be I was up for a role in quite a popular TV show. Mm-hmm. They film in England, and like, it's like, you'd know it. It's kind of made a name for itself like all over the world in America and stuff like that. So I was up for like quite a good like featured role in that. And I don't know, I had to send in like a video audition.
Yeah.
And like, I rented a space, and you know, I was so like ready to be TV famous, and then I just didn't get it. And like, as an unsigned, like, I'm not with like an agent or anything like that. So like, these things aren't like these things don't happen to me like every week. Not yeah. that would with people who are signed as well, but like still. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was a big deal for me and then I didn't get it, but sure, that's life.
Yeah. So how did you get the audition without an agent, I suppose?
I got it through Fishpond, which was like great. Crazy, you yeah. know, like fair play to them because, you know, it's a, for those of you who don't know, it's like an agency website that you pay to kind of be a part of and they, you know, put you, or you kind of put yourself forward for professional auditions.
Yeah.
And amazingly through that, like I ended up being considered for this role and like, yeah, I don't know.
It's great. No, and so I was thinking about this earlier today, funny what? Enough. So it's on my brain. So if it sounds prepared, it's because I was thinking about it. But I was listening to this podcast myself recently and someone was talking kind of about where we are, I suppose, both in our career, because I suppose even reading out that question to you, like we spoke about how you are really young, you're 20, like mm-hmm. I'm very young as well, I'm 23, we're both like very much like at the beginning of our careers. So it can be like, I can imagine like it sounding kind of like, I could imagine listening to that in like 20 years, you know, when I'm 43 and being like, oh, these guys talking about career disappointment. But, you know, mm-hmm. everyone's in a spectrum. And I completely understand that feeling of being in consideration for something and like in investing in it. And like I live my life when I'm in those waiting periods as if I have mm-hmm. the job, which is stupid. And it's bad for your heart and your emotions because you get so invested.
I know, and I'm so guilty of that.
Yeah, yeah. You love it so much. And I think that's ultimately that's a good thing. But it I don't know how sustainable it is long term. But anyway, I was listening to this podcast and someone was talking about, you know, this place where you're, you know, auditioning and mm-hmm. Trying to get representation, and when you kind of know all the things you want to do and you're full of all that, you know, that like good healthy ambition, and how it seems unattainable and how you feel like no one knows you. But what was really cool about what they said was they're like, that's actually really powerful, because to you, yes, it feels like anonymity and it feels like you're really far away from where you want to be. But to someone else, it's a really powerful position because they're like, I could break this person. Like in the best way. Like I could be the person who gives them their debut role.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like forevermore, like kind of like you know, you'll be associated with them, and if they like, you know, believe in you and they think you're like fundamentally talented, you know, everyone wants to be associated with the next big thing.
Yeah.
Or even a little thing.
That's so cool. Yeah, no, I never considered that before, that there is power in being like unknown.
There really is. I think there is. Now, like, yeah. Don't get me wrong, there's definitely more power in a way in being Tom Cruise, you know what
yeah.
I mean? Or like, you know, that's a silly example, but being like established on like the Irish or, you know, international, you know, theatre stage, that will probably give you a good chance of like moving into like film and TV a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. Or if you had like, you know, a role on a soap, maybe like, you know, if you leave that in a while, you'd be in a place to, you know, move to a film or something, and then yeah. they can say, well, look, so-and-so has been in X, Y, and Z, and X, Y, and Z are really successful, so let's put so-and-so in our thing, and it's likely to work. But also, it's like, well, this person, like, no one knows them. Like, they're like our secret.
Oh,
like,
God.
Why don't we share our secret with the world?
I love that.
It's
oh,
nice.
My God.
Yeah.
That's so... Yes, I'm going to think of that now. That's going to stay with me.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Because someone else, it's not my thing. Someone else said it. But mm-hmm. I just think there's something to be said for it.
Definitely. Yeah.
All right.
Huh.
We go again?
Yes.
No, all right. Let's do it.
Let's go.
Okay. Number seven.
No.
Oh, I thought you had number seven for some reason.
No.
No, that's okay.
What is happening?
So who's the funniest person you know?
Oh, that's a hard question to ask someone who's like...
Hangs out with so many comedians.
So many comedians.
I know.
I feel like I know more professional comedians than actors at this point. Just
yeah.
where I am, because like facts has just taken over my life in a way.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to say any of the comedians that I know because, you know.
Yeah,
they're all
hilarious.
They'll be incredibly hurt if I don't name them. Okay. My friend Aoife is one of the most unintentionally hilarious people that I know. And I don't know how to describe it to another person because it's so like just my group of friends. Like we all went to school together and stuff, and she's just like, she, I don't know, she's very dozy. She's like an 80-year-old woman
right.
in like the body of like a 20-year-old, and like she tries to talk to us like on our group chat, and she like misspells words, and she's like, she would ask us, you know, what are we doing today? Because she can't scroll up on like Messenger and stuff like that. I don't know. She's just, I don't know how to describe this because I've had like many years of just like being in her company that I don't even know what it is about her that makes her funny to me, but she just is hilarious to me. Do you get that?
I do. I don't know why this is either, but I think there's something about home friends that are nearly funnier, because I agree. I live in town now, and I so many of my friends are professionally funny. Like, it's their job to be funny or their job to be entertaining. Like, they're a lot of entertainers and stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, there's something hilarious about those people you went to school with, though. And, like, that you had those, like, times. Maybe it's just the subtext of everything that came before makes what they say that bit funnier. It's crazy. Like, some of my hardest laughs have for sure been with, like, home friends over stupid stuff.
Super stupid. And it's even more special now, like when we would like meet up and see each other, you know, because we all have branched out and have friends like in different like places and stuff. It's really nice to be together as a group and like us all laughing about a thing that only we would find funny, you know. Yeah. It's really cute.
Yeah, it's great.
So I'll say, Aoife. She's a good gal.
Hey, Aoife, friend of the show.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go again. Okay. Number.
I have the pen in my hand ready.
That's so funny. Okay, I need to tell you what happened.
What?
I just picked out number 81 and number 85. Now, I can tell you exactly why I did that. Because I thought, as I said at the start, I thought that like I might not have had all the numbers in here.
Okay.
And then I checked and I was missing two numbers. And I was like, but like, as in, we're just coming back from Chicago because the machine broke, so the balls like went everywhere. So I thought I was missing two numbers, and I thought I was missing number 11 and number 25. So I picked out number 81 and number 85 and wrote them down here just for the sake of transparency so we wouldn't be missing numbers. But then I found them and I obviously forgot to take them out. So these are two dummy balls.
Fact's
so
sake.
This is like a historical moment in Personality Bingo. There is actually like a fault. This is like the Oscar equivalent of Personality Bingo.
What are you doing, Dom? You made such a mistake.
I think that I'm La La Land and you're Moonlight.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm the accountant and you're the person who had to read out the nominations.
I'm Warren Beatty. I'll be happy to be Warren Beatty.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, no worry. That can't happen again now because they're gone. That's just so funny that they came out like together. But anyway.
You pick out two and I still can't get a number.
Yeah, okay. So this is going to be a number for you. Number 33.
No, 32.
So close. All right, never mind. Number 33. What's your least favorite word?
I think my least favorite word is I don't even like saying it. I hate the word fanny.
Oh, I don't like fanny either.
Isn't it so awful?
Or even fanny pack.
No, I can't. I can't do it because it's not even
fanny.
Yeah, it's.
Do you remember in history there was some historical figure in history that you learned about in school, and her name was Fanny something? Or like the first winner of Wimbledon. I don't know what she did, but like, and it used to be hilarious whenever, because it's just an awful.
Yeah, that name defo came up like a few times in school and people were like, Fanny.
Yeah, it's funny that Fanny is so funny.
Yeah, hey,
it is.
Hey, there you go.
So, okay, honest question here. Does Fanny mean vagina?
Yes.
Okay, I just checked.
Did you not know that?
No, because, okay, and to you, what does bollocks mean?
Bollocks means like testicles.
Yeah, you see, I think that too, but
what?
There's another part of me that thinks that both of them mean bum, but I think that maybe that when I was young, I might ask my parents what both of them meant and they didn't want to say testicles and vagina, so they just said it just means your bum.
And they were just straight up liars. And now you're like, well, that's what the word means.
Honestly, I do have an association between the two and I don't know why.
Yeah, well, fanny does mean bum in America.
Yes.
Yeah, because I know that's been a mistake in like facts videos, someone like saying like fanny and then like commenters being like, oh, they like anal or something like that. That's it. Yeah,
because you see, I played pitch and putt as a child.
Right.
Really enjoyed it. It was great pastime for me of a summer's day, but I used to keep my like tees and my balls and all that kind of stuff in a little fanny pack, but I didn't call it a fanny pack.
No.
I didn't like saying fanny pack, so I called it a bum bag.
That's way more acceptable.
Yeah, sounds better. Kind of nice.
Yeah, you got your nice little like alliteration going on. Yeah. Bum bag. Yeah. Yeah. I don't, it's just a gross word in every sense because it, you know, it is kind of related to like vagina and then, but you, like you never want someone to associate like your genitals with the word fanny, like call it a fanny.
Yeah.
That's not sexy.
No, do that in your own time.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know.
Not on my watch.
No.
Let's go again. Okay, here we go. Ooh, the ball came out there.
I didn't look
just, I just put it back in. Number 13.
No.
Okay, never mind. Never mind. I still have faith in you, okay?
I'm cursed.
What are your thoughts, speaking of cursed, on the year 2016?
Well, obviously it was, like, not the best year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a weird year for me as well because, like, the first half of the year, like, I was super motivated and I did loads of stuff and I was still in college, so, and I got, like, the lead in the musical and all the kind of
stuff. Where'd you go to college?
I went to Bilali.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so we did, like, the lovely big musical in the Civic at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And we did Chorus Line and it was the best.
Amazing.
But, like, that was the year that I, like, I got my shit together and I was super motivated and stuff. And then, like, I got out of college, got like sick, completely crashed for like a few months, and I just, I don't know, I've kind of picked myself up for the rest of the year. So weird year for me.
Mm.
Like kind of like a dual, like good and bad. And then like in terms of all the bad stuff that happened, like it's just, I'm not sure if this is right because I don't have a maths head on me, but like, you know, like it's this kind of probability, obviously there's going to be a year that like all the things just happen to be terrible and loads of people die.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the year that killed David Bowie, so, you know, it's a pretty shit year.
Yeah, if I could draw a picture of a young David Bowie fan, I think I'd draw a picture of you.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You see, okay, all right, I don't think I've ever said this before, and it's kind of a bit of a secret.
Mm.
A lot of the people that died in 2016, I didn't really know about. I know very little about David Bowie. I'm definitely not a David Bowie fan. Mm. Absolutely not opposed to him and the way he's influenced so many people that I love and admire. I'm uh-huh. like, he's obviously an incredible artist, but I'd be just being dishonest if I claimed to have like known him and been incredibly upset when he died. It was weird. The celebrity who I was most upset who died in 2016 was Anton Yelchin.
Oh yeah.
So the actor who was crushed by his car. That was really sad. Like they were all, sorry, they're all really sad. Like any loss of human life is sad. And but it was mad how that happened. And then people, you know, were trying to like rationalize it and saying that, well, that was kind of the time when celebrity in Hollywood became a thing, when a lot of these people would have been in their, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s and getting towards that age. Like, I mean, but like a lot of them are very young still. Like, how old was Bowie when he died?
He was 69, which is still quite young.
I feel like that's an appropriate age for him to die at, considering all the crazy sex that man must have had.
Oh, God. I loved reading after he died, like, all the groupie stories that would come out. I did the same when... See, this year they killed Prince as well.
Prince, yeah.
See, their type of music would be the music that I would listen to.
Right. George Michael. They all feel in that same bracket of, like... music as
well. Yeah, they're all like incredibly famous people, and I guess like they live such extravagant, like fast-paced lives that kind of caught up with them. Well, caught up with it. I mean, I feel like they lived full lives, no matter like what age that they died at. You know, it's like that's a pretty damn good life that you got there.
Yeah, totally. And like, it's a weird thing that society does as well, where it says like a longer life is better.
Yeah.
Like, it's a kind of weird thing, and I totally understand it because obviously, like, we all. Not all of us, but like fingers crossed, most people enjoy their life and how they live. But it is a weird thing the way people are just like a longer life's better. It's like why?
Not really.
Like it might be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Like when I left secondary school, I started singing in nursing homes and stuff, mm-hmm. and like it was that really like put things in perspective and made me realize just how like. I don't know. It was just a very sad experience for me to see like these people that were like in a nursing home. They're quite old, and I don't know. It made me quite sad about like some of like what aging does to your body. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Like maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's why I'm saying that is like, so these people, you know, lived in terms of like age and what like we think is a full life. Now they lived like, if you're in a nursing home, you're probably like at least in your 70s, 80s, mm-hmm. 90s, and beyond. But it's like that part, you know, the way you hear people say like, oh, if I get to the point where I can't talk and I don't have my thoughts, like I want people to pull the plug or whatever, which is fine, and I understand that. But it's like all those examples that we listed, like of Prince, Bowie, George Michael, these kind of guys. I could be wrong, but as far as I know, like they pretty much lived to the full of their capacity until the end. I think Bowie might have been sick, was he?
He had cancer, I think he found out like a year before.
Right.
Before he died. But he was still, like, he spent that year like writing his album and stuff. And
so they never got to that point where like, yeah, their bodies capitulated, which I suppose is what you're seeing in a nursing home. And it's kind of like, my granddad passed away. It's almost exactly the year we did a mass for it at the weekend. Uh-huh. So almost exactly a year, and I was kind of with him quite a lot for his last like few hours, I suppose, like probably his last 72 hours of life. And it was incredible to just like watch like the life leave someone, you know. Mm-hmm. And literally like watch life like literally like
that's like, it a lot of people yeah a lot of you. People say that when like someone dies, there's just that last like breath.
Yeah,
I've had that described to me a few times.
It was like, the best way I think I could describe it, it was as if like there could have been a counter above his head saying that like granddad has 9,000 breaths left, and you were just watching like and literally life just leaving someone. And and it was actually like, and I don't mean this because like that's what you should say, but there was something like profoundly beautiful about it, and watching someone like literally return to like a baby. Mm-hmm. You know, where he couldn't talk, couldn't really open their eyes.
Yeah.
Just totally like return to that like state of helplessness, you know. And I guess, yeah, so maybe that's what I'm saying. Like, why do we put more of a value on that? And like, don't get me wrong, he was with all his family and people who completely loved him, and I think he was very comfortable.
Yeah.
And then these, oppositely, like these are examples of, albeit very high profile examples of people who just kind of, you know, left the world before they ever got to that point.
Mm.
And it's just interesting.
And I think that at least in all of those examples, like Prince Bowie and George Michael, they were, I think they were kind of winding down. They weren't at the like pinnacle of their careers anymore. And they were kind of not doing anything really.
Yeah,
anymore,
it wasn't,
you know what
like,
I mean? Like,
I suppose when someone like, you think of that 27 Club, when someone like Amy Winehouse dies, mm-hmm. or when someone like Jeff Buckley dies, you're like, whoa, they were like at the peak of their powers, maybe.
Exactly, you like they had so much to do,
yeah.
You know, left to do. Which is why it was so sad with Anton Yelchin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Incredible actor. Mm. Yeah, beautiful actor. But yeah, it was a crazy year. Like Carrie Fisher and her mom.
Debbie Reynolds.
That was Leonard Cohen. And, oh, I mean, you're leaving out so many people by, mm-hmm. yeah, it was, you know the way like people are always like, but like God takes his prettiest flowers first, and then like there's that part of it that's kind of like, well, I'm still here. Like,
why am I dead?
Why am I dead? If you're taking all the best ones, no, I'm. I think I'm up there. Anyway, we go again.
Yeah, let's go.
All right, okay.
Come
here we go.
On.
All right, number 56.
54.
Oh, it's kind of close, but no cigar. All right, what do you think people's first impressions of you are?
I think people see like my nerves. I think I come across quite like a nervous, kind of like twitchy, kind of like anxious person. And I think people see me as quite timid as well. And maybe just a little bit odd, you know, like mm-hmm. I always consider myself, well, I've had it said to me like for years, like, oh, you're quite eccentric, Nicole. And I'm like, am I? I'm trying to blend in here, guys. Wow. Yeah, I think it doesn't really get me down. I've just kind of accepted it. But that's how like I assume I come across to people, and I still, you know, like it's not a bad thing necessarily. I kind of wish I was more in control of that, but
how you were perceived,
how I perceive, yeah, I wish I was more in control of, because you don't want to come across nervous to people, but it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah
I don't know.
And as well, like, I'm so aware of our age when we're talking, because we're both very young. But I'm 3 years older than you, mm-hmm. so I'm gonna. But
you're gonna school me.
If I, yeah, absolutely. If I am 20 to 23 is not like a long time, but it's a long time. Like I've changed so much in that time.
Yeah,
so much. Got so much more comfortable with myself, and I don't know. I don't think that's actually an age thing, really. I think it's probably like an exposure thing and an acceptance thing, and a therapy thing, mm-hmm. and loads of different stuff. But I feel like, fingers crossed, like, the only way is up in that way, like, for you. Because I understand that, like, of it. Because if people tell you that you're nervous, you're kind of conscious of, like, the effect that that might have on them as well as anything else, which, like,
exactly,
you don't want.
No, no.
But, yeah, I'm trying to think of what my first impression of you are. I think it's weird when you know someone from facts videos and then you meet them or work with them.
Yeah, it is.
I don't
really
know you very well,
thing.
Really. I think we've done one video together.
We did one video together, yeah, which I very much enjoyed. It was quite enjoyable. And we've been to, like, a few parties together. Yeah, what was your impression of me?
Yeah.
Because, like, I could be wrong. I've had people, like, you know, say different.
I don't think you're wrong. I think you're like exhibiting excellent self-awareness, because I think I would have I think if you're a very, like, gentle person. Very, like, caring. I could understand nervousness, how that would be perceived, but I think that I probably would associate that with myself, especially maybe myself even like 18 months ago.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't unnerve me or make me feel uncomfortable or anything like that.
I feel like sometimes, in a way, because I am very honest about, like, how I feel, and, like, you know, I love to tell people, like, oh, I'm feeling like crap right now, or I'm feeling nervous, or, like, just being honest with that. And I think people seeing me as a nervous person, it almost, like, that's a part of themselves. I think everybody has that nervous part of themselves, and if they see that in a person, you know, they're like, okay, I see that. I appreciate the fact that, you know, I understand that person.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. Like,
yeah,
I feel
endearing.
Like I'm a relatable, like, character in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's kind of nice to see, like, not the cracks in someone, but you know what I mean?
Mm.
To see, like, it's kind of, I think that's what, like, is kind of nice about, like, certain celebrities as well. Like, someone like Ed Sheeran, like, people love Ed Sheeran.
Mm-hmm.
Why do people love Ed Sheeran? Probably because he's not the most handsome guy in, you know, Hollywood or whatever, you know, in the entertainment industry. Like, he feels relatable. I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
No, I get it. Yeah. And I can only hope that I am that type of person as well, and that I, you know, I'm not making people uncomfortable with who I am. But, like, I've never, like, I've wanted to play, like, games or try and come across as, like, more confident or, like, I don't know. I've never wanted to trick people in that way. It's not really tricking, but I've always just been very honest about, like, how I'm feeling.
Uh-huh.
You know the way, you know, some people, like, hide that because they want to become, you know, come across stronger. I've never had that part of me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I had a really interesting example of this over the last month, and someone who did the podcast, who I don't know very well, which is pretty much most of the people that did the podcast, mm-hmm. have done the podcast. Like, I know all the people who've done the podcast, but, like, I don't think anyone that's done the podcast yet would be, like, one of my best friends, as far as I know. I'm afraid saying that now, in case they are. But I know.
It's fine.
I think that's true. Especially that have been released thus far, anyway.
Yeah.
And I was texting them after, just saying, thanks very much for doing it. I really appreciate it. I think it was a great episode. And just hope all is good with you and you were happy with, like, how it went.
Mm-hmm.
And got back. And we just started, like, chatting back and forth. So this is probably, like, you know, 15, 20 messages into the conversation. And the person described me. We were talking about stuff. And they said something like, oh, you're very aloof. And I was like,
ooh.
I took that as, and I know they didn't mean it as an insult, and I've actually spoken about it since, but I took that a bit as, like, oh gosh, I don't want to come across as aloof. Oh my God. Because aloof to me was, like, snobbish or, like, looking down on something.
Oh no.
That was the connotation I took from it. That's not what they meant. They mm-hmm. kind of meant just, like, cool or composed or something, which is not really who I would see myself as, and mm-hmm. I would say people who know me well, I don't think they would describe me as that. And then I was trying to work it out, and I was like, well, maybe it's, like, podcast me and, like, that, like, facts channel me. It's definitely, like, authentically me, but it's a very specific part of me, if that makes sense.
You know, yeah, that makes sense. We all have our different, like, personalities that we just whip out at different times for some reason.
Yeah.
But it's still part of us,
absolutely.
You know?
It doesn't feel phony to do it, but yeah, it's a real funny thing, you know, like, sometimes in videos people go, like, I get this sometimes, and people go, like, they're trying too hard, and I'm like, that one always makes me laugh in a way, because I'm always just like, of course I'm trying. I'm like, I've been brought in to taste something. Like, I have to try and say something about it.
It's hard because, like, we're given something and there is that pressure. You have to think of something. Like, we're actively trying to think of something funny. Yeah, exactly.
You can't just sit there and taste it and kind of go, yeah, it tastes like chicken.
Yeah, like, some of my worst videos that I've done have been the ones where I couldn't think of anything to say. And I felt awful afterwards, you know? Yeah. Like, of course I'm going to try because that's the worst feeling. That, or, like, you know, have you ever had, like, a video come out and, like, you get like one line in the video and then you're watching and you're like, oh, I didn't say anything good.
Yeah. That producer's never going to want me back. Exactly. I think I contribute nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. And I think people as well, like, don't understand that they're like edited like heavily. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, as in, like, it all happens like what we do, but like they're editing like a bigger thing. Like, and sometimes I think people like forget that, you know?
Yeah.
And like all the stuff that is said that like doesn't go in. You know, like recently, I said something kind of controversial on it that got a bit of people keep coming up to me. Like, so this is probably going to come out in like a few weeks. Uh-huh. So it's all forgotten about like after a day. But like there was like a bit of like backlash online, which is fine, and it's kind of funny, and it doesn't. It's funny. I thought that kind of stuff would affect me if people were like, "I hate that guy."
Yeah,
it doesn't bother me at all.
No. That's interesting. I think it took me like a bit of getting used to be honest.
Yeah.
But I think the only thing that I ever see someone say anything bad about me has been like, I don't know, like my looks or something like that. And I'm like, I'm like, I don't care.
Because see, I think looks could have hurt me.
Oh yeah?
If someone was like, oh, that guy is fat, I think that would honestly like affect me. I think I'd just look in the mirror after that.
Mm. See, it's the personality stuff that like gets me. Like if someone says, what are they doing? Like they're spazzing out or something like that. I'm like, oh, because I know he spazzed out. Ah. Right. You know, it's only when someone like points out something that I feel in myself that like is an insecurity of mine. That's when it's like, whoo. Yeah.
Same as, it's a weird one. It's a weird one. But we were talking about aloofness.
We were talking about aloofness.
But we can move on. I was just saying it's interesting. And I was saying, I wondered, was the reason that I came across as aloof was because that person like pretty much met me for the first time on the podcast. And in this situation, I'm probably like a little bit more like, I'm by no means like an alpha male, but in this situation, I like talk a lot and be kind of like, you know, we're having a back and forth, but like, I know I can be like probably like dominant in a conversation or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I wondered like, because I think that's what they meant it as. They meant it as a compliment, like kind of like composed and like has your shit together and articulate.
I would love to be called aloof because I think that's so opposite to what I come across that I'm almost like I kind of crave. Like I'd love like for once someone to call me that because it's like, oh wow, you know. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. So do you think that you like how you come across?
It depends on the day. It depends on my mood. Sometimes like I really wish that I came across like a mystery or. You know, like I've really admire, or I get kind of jealous of, to be honest, of like girls that come across like a, almost like a manic pixie kind of, like just very aloof, like she disappears into the wind kind of type of woman. Because I'll never be that, you know.
Yeah.
I can't remember your initial question, but I don't know.
Do you like how you're perceived?
I
think that was it.
Yeah, I think I do.
Yeah.
All in all, I think I do.
I think you should. I had a very nice first perception of you.
Oh,
I think. And from the videos. What's nice about you is you're very like similar in real life to like.
Yeah.
Because I would have known you before we met from like YouTube, which is weird, you know? That's a weird thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shall we do another ball?
Let's do another ball.
Because I haven't gotten a number.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying my best for you here. All right, number 15.
16.
Oh. Who is the most memorable character from your hometown?
I've listened to this question like in the episodes that I've listened to before and I was trying to think of it myself because I knew you wanted me on here, Tom.
I wanted you. I wanted you bad.
Oh wow, the evil laugh.
That was a little cackle. Yeah. All right, panto villain, calm down there.
The only thing I could think of was because I'm a North Dublin gal, I'm from Colchester, so I... Gloucester kind of borders Dunnycarney, Artown, all these lovely little North Dublin suburbs. And I remember like in my childhood, there was a huge trend where the women would wear like their pajamas outside. Mm. So they'd be going around the shops, like just walking around with their buggies, like just wearing their pajamas. They didn't get dressed. And I always find that quite strange, which is weird in a way because it's like, why should I tell, why should I judge people like in how they dress?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I thought that was quite weird because I don't think in any other country, in other, like that is a thing, mm-hmm. like whatsoever, that people just wear specifically like their pajamas outside. Maybe it's because I live in my pajamas, so like if I was to do that, I'd be like, slept in my pajamas the night before, woke up and walked out the door.
Yeah.
But maybe these women, like, I don't know what their system was, they were like putting on fresh ones or something.
Yeah.
But like I remember one of the women, because these were like, these were moms from what I remember, mm-hmm. so they were like in their like 30s, 40s. I remember one of the women saying to my mom, Trish, why do you get all dressed up all the time when you're just going down like to do the weekly shop? Like, I just put on my pajamas and I go.
Yeah.
I can kind of get behind that philosophy in a way, but it's just, I don't know. I just, when I imagine like weird figures from my hometown in my childhood, I just remember these women going around their pajamas pushing boogies like.
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. I know like I probably wasn't like exposed. I didn't see much of that like from where I was from, but I remember it, like hearing about it like on like this phone show that I used to listen, like for American listeners, it's like it was on FM 104. It was Adrian Kennedy and Jeremy Dixon, and mm-hmm. they had this phone show, and it was on like between 9 in the evening and 1 a.m. I think, and I used to listen to it going to school. I used to fall asleep to it, and they kind of talked about like edgy stuff. Like sometimes they talk about like sex, and like sometimes they talk about women in pajamas, which are different, I know, but in the same program. It was outrageous, and it was probably similar to like now why I like podcasts. I just like these two people like interacting. It fascinated me. But I remember hear them talk about this, and I was always kind of like and I got what they meant, because they kind of like were like, ah, it's classless, and like why would you do it, and like you'd never see that in Fox Rock kind of thing. But I was kind of like, ah, they're comfy. Like I think it probably does have something to do with like how you were raised, and like what like emphasis was put on your life, like where your family kind of very presentational, and like they wanted everyone out the door to mass, and like, you know, like buttoned up shirts to the top. Or was it kind of like, no, just be comfortable, and once you're happy and you're doing okay, that's
kind of nice. It's like a revolution against the posh bitches, as they would say, as I
yeah, as the Donna Carney ladies would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Boogie Brigade.
Exactly, yeah. The Boogie Brigade, I love that.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, yeah, good. All right, we go again?
Let's go.
All right, amazing, let's do it. Okay, here we go. Number 42.
No.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm not doing, you can pick the next one out.
Okay. I was determined to come in here and win this thing, but here we go.
You know, it could happen. Let's see how long you've got left.
How
like
much time?
You've got about 15 minutes left.
Oh, Jesus.
It could happen.
Okay.
Okay, all right. Let's give it a go.
Okay.
Let's open ourselves to the universe. It could happen.
Right. All right. We're just having too good of a chat. That's it.
I think that is the problem. But I'm going to ask you a question anyway, right? So if you had to go back in time, okay, would you go back to the ages of 12 to 15 or 15 to 18?
12 to 15, because I feel like I could have done like more extracurricular activities that would have aided me in my career now. Like I was very interested in musical theater. It's still like a huge like thing that I want to do, and like I love so much, but I don't have the dancing to match it. I mean, I can dance, but I'm not like of a level. And I remember,
can we high five?
Yeah,
I'm the exact same.
Yes. Like I can sing, I can act, can't dance. And like that's an issue, and it kind of in a way, like it's kind of like pulling me back a bit, like from pursuing musical theater like full time, because mm-hmm. I'm so scared of my dance. So yeah, I think I would have like stuck myself in ballet and dance classes and get that bet into me like at that age, and maybe started learning guitar at that age, at those ages now, instead of like 20 now, which it's great that I'm doing it now, and I can still pick up dancing now, but like would have been a lot better.
Yeah, I get you. That's a really interesting answer, and I would have never thought about that, but I probably would agree. I never did any of that either, and now that's what I do. And yeah, it's funny, like, and I think sometimes maybe it is a case of like dictating it, but like even in terms of musicals and stuff, like I work in musicals like quite a lot, but I don't like a lot of musicals. And
tut,
I know I don't. Sometimes I'm like, this is stupid, but like most of the time, like when it's good, it's so good, because like music can do this thing to you that nothing else can do, and like, you know, it's brilliant. But what I was gonna say was that, like, do you think that restriction? So you're saying that you're an actor, singer, musician now, which is great, and so that restriction, like, okay, so you're never gonna be in cabaret. That was the best. You're never going to be in like a really heavy. That's not true. Cabaret, you could actually be in. You're never going to be in a really dancey show though. Like
exactly.
Something like Footloose. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's what I should have said. Yeah. But like, do you think that that's affected your taste? Like, would you? Do you yearn to be in a Footloose or like say something like Les Mis or a Miss Saigon or Phantom of the Opera that doesn't really involve any dancing? Like, would that be more your taste?
I think when I listen to musicals, I listen to them like imagining like this is a thing that I could be in. So it's actually, It's almost a little painful to me. Like if I am listening to a musical that's very dance heavy, because I know that I can't be in it in my head. So that kind of ruins the experience. So I'm almost like the other way where I'm like, no, I can't really go near like, you know, like, so like Cats or American in Paris, because I can't, it's too painful. I like when I listen to stuff like musical, like soundtracks, I'm like, oh, like I'm imagining myself in the show.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
That's really interesting. That's really true. I never thought about that, but I do that too. You're right. Yeah. So it's interesting. I think I let my limitations inform my taste a little bit.
I know. And you know, an American in Paris is probably lovely, but I wouldn't know because I can't bring myself to listen to it.
Yeah. We'll never know. All right, we go again.
Yeah.
Okay. Number 51.
No.
Oh my god. Okay, you're gonna pick the next one. I'm gonna leave it over here to remind
you.
Okay.
Yes.
Number 51. The question is: happy or sad? Tell us about a moment in your life that you'll never forget.
A moment in my life that I'll never forget.
Aside from this one with me. Bent in the Head Stuff Studios.
Oh my god.
Find us at headstuff.org. Head Stuff Podcast Network.
No, you distracted me. Sorry. Were doing that while I could think. I remember when I was in fifth class, it was my last day of like school and stuff like that. My mom and I had booked a holiday to go to Greece. And I came home, and when I opened the door, like, she was crying. And it turns out, like, her ex-boyfriend had died. So the next day, she was, like, we still, like, went on the holiday. So she was, like, kind of, like, catatonic, kind of, like grieving and stuff. And I remember leading her through the airport and being, like, very independent. And it was me that was definitely, like, taking that kind of, like, role of, like, getting us to Greece in a way.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, not to get, like, too personal or anything like that, because that's, you know... that's definitely a moment that I'll remember that like kind of changed me in a way, where suddenly it was like this mother figure, suddenly it's not like concrete. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that, yeah, I always remember that. Like, that's definitely a moment like in my life where I was like, whew, like that was, it definitely changed me in a way. Cause I saw myself as like, in a way, like I have the abilities and like, I have to, you know, there could be another time where I'm gonna have to like guide my mom through something and be like the parent in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And like I obviously have the abilities because we got the Greece and it was grand, you know. But yeah, that was definitely a moment that like sticks out for me, where that like things kind of like shifted in my mind. And I was like 11, so that was like a very like, you know, a very interesting like age for change happening in my life anyway. Mm-hmm. For that to happen as well.
Yeah. And so are you an only child?
I'm an only child, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a weird moment as well. I have to imagine that, like, when you had to parent your parent,
yeah,
for a second.
And I think most people have had a moment in their lives, maybe it is yet to come, where they will have to do that. But like, yeah, to have that happen at that like certain age, it definitely like totally shifted things for me in my mind.
And if this is too personal, we can cut it out. But I'm just gonna ask you, because I'm like, is your dad in your life?
He is, but He doesn't live in the house, and it, you know, I see him every once in a while.
Yeah, so like that, I don't know, because I'm not in that situation, but mm-hmm. I would imagine that that like creates a really, there must be this incredible bond between you and your mom, because in a way, like obviously like there's still that mother-daughter relationship, but in a way you're kind of like these like weird little like life partners for each other too, you know?
We're very much like... Yeah, we're kind of like mates, but at the same time, like, we fight a lot, so we're like mates to fight a lot, but like we're bound together.
Which is probably best mates, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, who'd you fight with? Probably the friends that you feel are worth a fight.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. No, like, I think about that a lot, actually, because like me and my mom, like, it's always been me and her together. And like those years where we spent like, you know, like watching TV together, just spending all our time together, going, you know, getting the weekly shop together, you know, walking together. Like I spent most of my time growing up, yeah, like in my mom's company. So it's, yeah, we definitely have like a very special bond.
Yeah.
You know?
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's great.
It's really interesting. Beautiful. Even though we kill each other, still, like,
yeah.
No.
But it's great. It's, yeah, anything that's like that close and like intense, I get, yeah, it's gonna have crazy up and downs.
I'm not sure if I'm gonna have like another bond as like close, like in my life, you know, as the one that I've had with my mom, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's a crazy thought, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is weird.
I'm sure you will. I bet that, like, that relationship you have with your mom probably informs a lot of your other relationships and maybe your future one. Like, if you know, decide to have, like, a partner down the line or decide to have children down the line, I guess those relationships always, like, inform each other, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see, like, so much, like, movies and theatre and films and stuff, it's like the son repeating the mistakes of the father, the mother, the daughter becoming what her mother was, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So hopefully, like, in a really positive way, you've had this beautiful relationship with your mom, and hopefully, like, it can, like, ripple out into other aspects of your life.
Exactly. Like, it, more and more I'm becoming, like, more conscious of how much I am like my mom, you know, good and bad. Like, it's very interesting just how much, like, obviously, like, if you spend that much time, like, in someone's company when they're growing up, you teach them to be, like, the only thing they can base like how to be a person off is the person that they're spending their time with.
Yeah,
you know. So I definitely, I don't know. Yeah, my mom is, she's so lovely. Like she's very like kind of quiet and timid, like anxious as well, like me. She's been in fax videos as well, and like,
yeah, I've seen her.
Yeah, she
looks like crack.
She's amazing, and she like she's. We're the exact same, where we're very like open and we tell everyone like our secrets, and we're like, yeah, so I'm feeling not great at the moment. And yeah. I kind of love that. Like, she made me be like this very earnest, open person, you know?
Gorgeous. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Will she listen to this, do you think?
I think she will.
Do you want to say hello?
Hi, Mom.
Hey, Mom.
Hey.
All right, we've got 5 minutes left. Okay, you pick one. You pick one. Let's see if you can do better than me. Okay. All right.
I can't believe this has happened to me. 22. No.
Oh, we had 23. 22. No luck. But the question is, I don't think this question's come up before. This is a weird question. Where's the strangest place you've ever woken up?
Okay.
That's a weird question. I didn't know that was there. And that's been there all along. I feel like that's never come up.
Weirdest place I've woken up. I once woke up. Now, this makes sense in the context of where I live. I live on the north side of Dublin. And I woke up on Paddy's Day morning in Saggart, like the morning after filming a film. And like, we slept in the director's house. Me and my friend were both like from the same area. And we woke up on Paddy's Day, like the complete opposite end of Dublin. And we had to try and like make our way home.
Yeah, probably
through the parade.
Public transport, yeah.
Yeah. That was just one of those moments where we were like, we just woke up in a very strange place on Paddy's Day morning. And it was just like, together we were like, this is quite strange.
And were ye hungover?
We were hungover.
Okay, yeah. Probably. I was just wondering, like, did you kind of, like, you know, when you wake up and you're kind of like, I forgot that I didn't go home to my bed. I forgot I'm in Saggart. Like,
yeah.
Saggart is a weird sounding place as well.
It is.
Bit disconcerting. Sounds very like the Irish for priest, which was Saggart, I think.
Saggart. I'm really bad with my Irish language.
Oh, that's okay. Don't worry about it. You look very Irish, so that makes up for it. I don't really look very Irish. I kind of just look like, I think I look more British or American than I do Irish.
I think you look American,
yeah. I think I look American too.
You're quite tan as well.
Yeah, which is weird because I shouldn't be. There's no reason for me to be tanned. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just an Irish boy with two pasty parents.
Two pasty parents.
That's the name of my autobiography, by the way. Okay, let's keep
going.
Do
we have time for
okay. Yeah. You pick again. Okay. 3 minutes.
48. No.
Oh my God. If there was one thing you could change about Ireland, what would it be? I like this question. I don't think it's ever come up.
Okay.
Do your best.
This is like pressure to be smart now.
No. Shamrock milkshakes all year round. Whatever you want. It doesn't matter.
Well, I'd have to say like separating the church and state, please. Because, you know, obviously it's completely dictated how our country has been run and what we value, like what types of people we value over the other, you know, like especially with the recent news of like Tomb and stuff like that. It's really had me thinking, like, God, like, we're such a young country and everything, and we didn't get off to a good start, like, you know, completely like gluing ourselves to this like kind of flawed thing. Now obviously, yeah, like I have friends that are Catholic, and like I respect the Catholic Church, but just not the people within the church in our country that have, you know, done these awful, awful things. Yeah. So, and it's still like in this day and age, like there needs to be a separation there, because it doesn't make sense anymore. Because like I don't know the statistics of how many people in Ireland are Catholic anymore, but it seems weird that we have like on our national like broadcasting like channel like still like the Angelus that plays over it, like, you know.
Yeah, Ireland and Iran, I believe.
Really?
The only two countries in the world that have that.
That's crazy. Yeah. See, like we need to be more accommodating to,
yeah,
what people are actually, the real people of Ireland are like now.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Mm. And it's difficult, and I agree. I think you're right. And do you know, for the longest time, it probably would have, I was never, I don't think I would have, like, I was definitely religious growing up, mm-hmm, first of all. But, and I think what the Catholic Church have done is disgusting and indefensible. And then there's the other human side of it, which is, and I don't connect the two because I think they're very different, but you see these priests, you know, who've dedicated their lives to helping people and trying to guide people through,
of course,
the world spiritually. Like they're just a fundamentally good person, regardless of whether they were like, you know, like Jewish or Muslim or
yeah,
atheist, whatever. They're just a good person. And I was actually at my granddad's anniversary mass this weekend, and the priest is just incredible, and he's so good to my granny, and my granny's really religious, like, mm-hmm, really like fundamentally like Catholic. And I was like, it must be so embarrassing for him to be associated with these scumbags who, yeah, buried like 800 kids in Tuam and like around the country, and who've sent women, like the way that women have been treated and the way young boys and girls have been abused, like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's awful. And then on the other hand, you see how, like, my granny, after my granddad's passing, I know that religion is the only thing that's keeping her with us, you know, and I know that too, but you just can't defend the institution. The institution is so rotten.
That's,
whereas,
it.
I don't think there's anything wrong. You know, like, people, there's some atheists who can be very militant and be like, you know, and maybe this is a bit of a caricature, but who think, you know, that anyone who like believes in God or whatever, like, that's just bullshit. How can you do that? Like, in the age of science, and like, I'm not like that. I completely understand the need for like a higher power and stuff, but the institution is got to the point where you just can't stand over anymore.
No.
Yeah.
Very well said.
Okay.
Boom.
All right. Let's do one more.
Okay.
Let's do one more. Do you want to pick it? You pick it.
I'll pick it.
You pick it.
Okay.
All
right. Okay. 57. Nope, unfortunately.
Oh,
it's
no.
Oh,
you had 54,
worst.
Right?
I had 54.
Oh, I'm so sorry for your loss. Yeah. Personality bingo. You've lost personality bingo. Basically.
Here we go. That is my
But what I will say about 57 that came out, it's a nice question to end on, I think.
Okay.
And it's brand new. It was the one that I just added in today.
Oh.
Brand new question. You're the first person to ever be asked it. You should feel very privileged.
I feel very privileged. Also,
hashtag blessed.
Oh my God, so blessed. Also, because I've listened to this podcast, like, I know the other questions.
Right.
So this is,
yeah, I think you're the first person who's like, who's been a listener. So that's brilliant. And thank you. That's really sweet.
No problem.
I'm so glad. It's really cool when people that you admire like something that you make. That's great. I think you're a very admirable person.
Oh, thank you so much.
So thank
much.
You. All right. So here we go. Finishing on some bread buttering and a lovely question. What are your dreams for the next 5 years?
Oh my God. Okay. My dreams. It's weird because, like, even when I'm trying to think of it right now, I'm trying to think realistically as well. Like, I would love to.
Hey, these are dreams, man.
Oh, these are dreams.
These are dreams.
Okay.
No, well, sorry, no, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but, like,
no.
Don't censor yourself. If you want an Oscar, that's okay.
Nicole, you're on a podcast. Be confident. You got this. You're great. Okay, we're back in.
Aloof.
You're so aloof. Oh my God. Everybody's like, who's that mystery girl? Oh my God. Right. Okay. So my dreams. I would love to, because musical theatre is such a big thing for me. Like, I would love to, like, by some miracle in the next 5 years, be on like the West End or even Broadway, because it's such a big thing for me, you know? I would love to be just working, you know, in acting, singing, writing, whatever, and just being able to live off that. Again, like going back to the question that we had before, like, I would just love to be able to just be living with my art, doing my thing and living off my art, and you know, get out of the parents' home.
Yeah.
In the next 5 years, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just hopefully, like, obviously be more accepting and loving of myself, and like be more outspoken to be able to stand up to the haters and misogynists on Twitter and stuff like that, and just be able to be a bit more kind of, I don't know, more assertive in a way. We can all be a little bit more,
yeah,
like, confident and more, you know, loving of ourselves. So I would love that too.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're doing a really good job. You're doing a good job.
Thank you.
thank you so much for doing it. Before I let you go, let me, like, okay, do you have anything that you want to plug? Do you have any social media? Anything that you just want to let the lovely listeners know?
Okay, so my play Both Sides Now is going to be in the Dublin Gay Theatre Festival from the 1st to the 6th of May.
Gay! Super gay!
The appropriate use of that.
Yes!
Sorry.
It's a one-woman show starring me, and I sing and play Joni Mitchell music, and it's about me being bisexual. Well, it's a character, but it's, you know, it's obviously, yeah, it's gonna, you know, it's gonna be based on my life in a certain way. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, Nicole O'Connor, but O'Connor with one N, so O-C-O-N-O-R. And I have a Facebook page now. Oh, I was so nervous about that.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I have to, just even the notions that comes with, you know, making an artist page on Facebook, it didn't make me feel 100% comfortable. But you can like that and soothe all of my risking my pride, yeah, at Nicole O'Connor page on Facebook.com. Boom.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, well, everyone go check out the Both Sides Now, because all I've heard is incredible reports. And it's going to be with my friend and the, yes, theatre company I'm involved with, Squad. They have a show on Wasting Paper, and they're in the same bill. So, like,
yeah,
it's a double whammy. My lovely friend Leah Moore and my other lovely friend Kira Smith, who's actually going to be on the podcast before you come out. So it's going to be great. It's going to be like a little gay theatre festival plug. It's going to be brilliant.
It's a wonderful hour of theatre. So, like, if you want to see me, you want to see Squad are brilliant. Like, just come see it, and it's about kissing girls, and I'm sure Leah's is about kissing girls too, so let's you know,
all
that's
the girl
great
kissing, yeah, if I write about kissing girls too,
yeah,
oh my god, so like this is just great. Alright, it's been so much fun. Thank you so much.
Thank
for doing
you so much for having
it.
Me
amazing. So guys, that was Nicole O'Connor playing Personality Bingo with Tom Moran. First of all, a massive thank you to Nicole for taking the time to do it. I really appreciate it. And as I said at the top, guys, please do check out her play in the Dublin Gay Theatre Festival, and also check out Squad Theatre Company's play, written by Leah Moore and starring Kira Smith, former guest of the show. I've always wanted to say that. That felt great. Guys, first of all, a few thank yous. A massive thank you to Head Stuff Podcast Network for having us. You can find them and us and the general collective at headstuff.org. Also, a huge thank you to Leah Moore and Anthony Manley. What a great name, Anthony Manley. I wish I was called Tom Manley. That would be great. For their music, you can check them out at More Than Machines. Also, a huge thank you, as always, to Connor Nolan, who did the deadly artwork for the podcast. And also a massive thank you to Taz Kelleher, the boss man, for producing, editing and mixing Personality Bingo. Guys, please do check us out on Twitter, on Facebook. It means the world to hear from you. And please do spread the word. If you think you know someone who would like this, just tell them to give it a try. One of the best compliments that we've got a couple of times via Twitter is, hey, I'm not really a podcast person, but I tuned in to listen to so-and-so and I really enjoyed it. So that really means the world. I would love to convert some non-podcast fans into podcast fans. And I think the Personality Bingo is a pretty accessible way to do that. So if you know someone who you think might like this kind of a thing, a little bit funny, a little bit serious, all that good stuff, please do let them know. Also, just check us out on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to give us 5 stars and leave a little comment, because that helps keep us up in the charts. And we haven't been in the charts in a few weeks, and I really liked rubbing shoulders with Mark Maron and Jarlath Regan and Joe Rogan. That felt great. So let's try get Personality Bingo back up there. As I said, we've got a really, really exciting episode coming out in the next few weeks. And we've got these amazing few American episodes, which I'm really excited to share with you guys. So make sure that you tune in next week for part one of our American tour of Personality Bingo. It's Carly Kane. Carly is one of the funniest comedians that I've had the pleasure of being friends with and of chatting to. And I think you guys will really, really, really enjoy that episode. So guys, until Carly's episode next week, a massive thank you to Nicole and a massive thank you to you guys for listening to Personality Bingo with Tom Moore.
This podcast is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.